This week, I'm going to be picking up where I left off a year ago. A year ago, I started a series in 1 Corinthians. It's on the website. I listened to it the other day. I got two chapters in, and then we shifted gears into Advent, and then we shifted gears to Pastor Fowle delivering a great series on 1 John. And Jeremy and Pastor Dave and this and that. And a year later, well, here I am. And we're going to get through it this time. A year ago, I opened up 1 Corinthians, and we looked at division in the church. We looked at how each one of us welcomed Jesus into our lives. And we looked at the wisdom of God compared to the wisdom of the world. And Paul's still continuing these themes in chapter 3 of 1 Corinthians, which is what I will be speaking out of. If you recall, the Corinthians were suffering conflict because some of them were claiming to be followers of Paul, others claiming to be followers of Apollo, and still others, followers of Christ. So Paul asks in chapter 1, verse 13, was Paul crucified for you? Was I the one who was crucified for you? Why are you saying you're my follower? I wasn't the one who died on the cross. It was Jesus. You should say you're followers of Jesus and none other. So Paul writes in chapter 3, and I, brethren, could not speak to you as spiritual men, but as the men of the flesh, as infants in Christ. What Paul's saying here is, you know, I'd love to speak to you as fellow mature Christians, but I can't because you're still acting like men of flesh. You're still acting like everyone else in the world, fighting among yourselves, quarreling, whatever. So if you're acting like people in the world, that means you're still baby Christians. And I have to talk to you like baby Christians. I have to give you milk to drink and not solid food, because you're not able to receive it. Indeed, even now, you're not able to, for you are still fleshly. For since there is jealousy and strife among you, are you not fleshly? Are you not walking like mere men? They're acting just like the world around them. They haven't matured in their faith. They haven't become what Jesus taught us to become. I can't converse with you like mature Christians. For when one says, I am of Paul, and another, I am of Apollos, are you not mere men? In other words, you're saying, I have this division. This is the Paul church, I'm the Apollo church. You're divided among yourselves. You're acting just like the rest of them. What then is Apollos? And what is Paul? Servants through whom you believed, even as the Lord gave opportunity to each one. Yes, you learned about Jesus through Paul. You learned about Jesus through Apollo. But it's Jesus you serve, not Paul or Apollo. Paul would have liked to have spoken to the believers in Corinth as adults. Their division showed him, though, they were still infants. They were young children in Christ. Now, I'm a new foster parent. We have two beautiful girls, ages 2 and 3. And that experience over the last 6 months has taught me a few things about children. See, children, I've discovered, they're totally self-centered. They're loud. They're obnoxious. They're destructive. They're irrational. They're messy, and they poop all over the kitchen floor. You see, Paul wasn't complimenting the Corinthians when he called them infants. The girls are great to have around. Kids are great to have around. Don't get me wrong. Having them, having Jacinta and Layla in my life, has been a real blessing. And I remind myself that they're a real blessing when they're having that 45-minute long temper tantrum because she didn't get the socks she wanted. Now, these types of temper tantrums, they seem kind of irrational to an adult, to you and me. A rational adult would probably say, oh, gee, I don't have the socks I want to wear today. I guess I'll have to wear something else. Not the toddler. She rolls around for 45 minutes, kicking and screaming, and won't sit in the chair, and blah, that kind of stuff. At Oaks Park, a rational adult might say, you know, I've rode that motorcycle ride 6 times in a row. There's other kids waiting to ride it. You know, there's lots more rides in the park. I can still have fun. Toddler, I don't want to get off. You can't make me. At the Taco Bell. Oh, my. I've chewed off both ends of my burrito. I guess I wasn't paying attention. I'll have to be careful so it doesn't spill down my shirt. The toddler, on the other hand, my burrito's broken. Fix it. Don't touch it. Mommy, you broke it. I want a new one. I don't want that one. I want mine. Where are you? The toddler response. I just cry when it's done. Adult response would be, I have to go to the bathroom. I better find a toilet. The toddler response, oops, I pooped in my pull-up. Let's take it off, dump it on the kitchen floor, and make art. The adult response, oh good, syrup for my pancakes. Let's pour a little bit on. The toddler response, syrup! All over the table, the silverware, the kid, pancakes, still dry. An adult would say, you know, we have some differences, but we're adults and we can agree on the basics. We can work this out. The toddler response, I hate you! I hate you! I hate you! I hate you! Toddler response. Which brings us back to the Corinthians. They were acting like children, and Paul was telling them as such. These divisions among them, this I hate you attitude, was causing them not to grow in their faith. Instead, they were growing in their feuding. They were acting just like Klingons. Oh, no, wrong sermon. They were acting just like children, irrational, destructive, messy, loud, and self-centered. We'll give them a buy on the poopy part. Paul continues in verse 6. I planted, Apollos watered, but God was causing the growth. So then neither the one who plants or the one who waters is anything, but it is God who causes the growth. Now he who plants and he who waters are one, but each will receive his own reward according to his labor. For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. So Paul's back to division in the church. Paul's saying that he and Apollos are only workers, that they're equal, and that it is God who's causing growth in the church and in our own lives. The planter and the irrigator are equal. Some of us are going to plant the seeds. Still others are going to water and nourish those seeds. But it's God who's going to rise it up. We'll each receive reward according to our own labor. But in our work, we're all equals. And the church, that's God's field, in which we are all workers. We're all either planters or irrigators. It seems to happen too often in our society, though, that when a pastor leaves a church, that the church crumbles because the people in the church have dedicated themselves to the ministry of the pastor instead of to the ministry of the church. There are several large churches that become very small churches after the departure of a dynamic leader. I wonder how Saddleback Church, that really big megachurch that Rick Warren's the pastor of, would fare if Rick Warren decided to move on. If the people there are dedicated to the teaching of Jesus, if they're dedicated to God's work, then it should endure. However, if they're more dedicated to Rick Warren, then the doors could eventually close. Anybody who's been in the church for any amount of time has at least seen, if not been affected by, a church split. Sometimes the reason is theological. Sometimes it's personality. And sometimes it's over something stupid like the color of the carpet. There's a song that says, "I'm getting back to the heart of worship." And you may or may not be aware of the history of the song. The worship leader of a church, and this church, much larger than ours, had everything perfect. They, you know, they had the perfect projection system, the perfect, you know, it was all set up. It was, you know, ours is kind of a piecemeal. They had the best and brightest of the musical instruments. The singers were American Idol quality. You had to try out to get on the worship team, and not everyone got on. They wouldn't let me near that stage if I was holding a double-barreled shotgun. You guys might not either if I started singing. But everything was perfect. But this worship leader canceled the music ministry because it had become about the music ministry and not about serving God. There were divas rising up out of it. There were people who were becoming very cliquish. There were people who would come, do the music, and leave. And that's all it was. They weren't worshiping God. They were promoting themselves. It's very hard to stay humble when the world wants to make you a star. Well, anyway, this pastor shut down the music ministry for several weeks. And before he started it up again, he wrote the song, "I'm Getting Back to the Heart of Worship." Because it's all about you. It's all about you, Jesus. He wanted to get back to his foundation and build it up again. Paul's telling the Corinthians, and he's telling many today, that their focus has went from Christ to something else, that they're acting childish. Think about the young starlets, the Hiltons, the Lohans, Richie, Spears, Kuchar, all the rest. They seem very childish to us sometimes. And much of that is because they are stars, because we let them. We want them to be that way. We enjoy watching their foibles. They've been made the objects of desire. Well, people in the church can become stars like that as well. Maybe not on the same scale, but they can be made stars by an adoring congregation. And sometimes those stars forget that they work for Christ. Instead, they become childish too. They start to think that it's their church, their personal property, their social club. Just in case you have any doubt, this church, Richmond Community Church, belongs to Jesus Christ. It is His to do with as He sees fit. It belongs to no individual, no group, no committee. It belongs solely to Jesus, and we are His servant. It's built on the foundation that Jesus has built. Paul continues in verse 9, "For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field, God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me, like a wise master builder, I laid a foundation, and another is building on it. But each man must be careful how he builds on it. For no man can lay a foundation other than the one which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if any man builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each man's work will become evident. For the day will show it, because it is revealed with fire, and the fire itself will test the quality of each man's work. If any man's work he has built on it remains, he will receive a reward. If any man's work is burned up, he will suffer loss, but he himself will be saved, as though through fire." Watch this. That cartoon's a pretty good modern-day illustration of what Paul is trying to teach. See, little pig one had built his house out of straw. The big bad wolf, which in our context represents disunity of the church, is able to get in because pig one's work is shoddy. It fails the test of fire. Pig one barely escapes with his life. Little Pig 2 built his house out of sticks. Matchsticks, to be exact. The Warner Brothers animators avoid the obvious pun here and don't set this house on fire. Instead, it collapses under the weight of its own shoddy construction. Little Pig 2 barely escapes with his life, and they both escape to the protection of Little Pig 3. Little Pig 3 built his house out of bricks, which is a strong construction material, one that has already withstood the test of fire. You see, bricks are baked in a kiln. Little Pig 3 is also portrayed as the mature one of the three little pigs. And sure enough, the immature pigs let the wolf of disunity into the house of bricks as well. And once inside, he tries to destroy things. It's only at the end is that the wolf is destroyed and pigs 1 and 2 have learned a valuable lesson. What are we building our house out of? Is it the shoddy materials of laziness and childishness that will be destroyed down to the foundation? Or is it the good materials of hard work and maturity that will withstand the test of fire? A few years back, the pastor of a megachurch in Colorado Springs was found to be living an immoral lifestyle and was removed in disgrace. Many times that happens in megachurches, and they crumble and fall down because the foundation they were built on was the teaching or the personality of that pastor, not the teachings of Jesus. But this one in Colorado Springs did not crumble and fall apart. I checked with some family in Colorado Springs, and they reported that that church is doing quite well. It had its roots and its foundation not on the personality of that pastor, but instead in small study groups, and that foundation was still good. Its foundation was built on Jesus' teaching, and it was built up from there. The removal of the pastor, I'm sure, was a blow. But as his part was removed from the structure, what the structure did remain behind, and they were able to rebuild what was taken away. 2 weeks ago, I told you the three parts of your job description as a Christian. They were go into all the world and share the good news. Love God and love your neighbor. And a good way to love your neighbor is to help them. And to go and sin no more. You know, that job description is a great first story to build on the foundation of Christ's teaching. A less good first story might be to build around a political cause or around commercial interests or on music or style. Those might not withstand the test. In the end, all that we have done in our life will face the test of God, as described here as a test of fire. If our work, if that which we have built is good, it will endure the test, just as gold, silver, and precious stones are purified by fire. If our work is subpar, though, it's going to be burned away, just as wood, hay, or straw would burn away. The foundation will remain. We'll be saved, but we'll be left with nothing else. Jesus said we'll be judged as Christians by how we treat others. This is the test of fire that Paul's speaking of. What are you building on the foundation that Jesus has laid down? Do you know that you are a temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? If any man destroys the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, and that is what you are. Now, here, Paul is not speaking to individuals, but to the church in general. Later on, he will talk about individuals being the temple of God. Right now, he is saying that the church itself is also the temple of God. And that if any man destroys the church which God has built, then God will destroy him. If somebody brings in false teaching or the cult of personality or redirects the focus away from God, that is destroying the temple, and it will not be tolerated. Think of that big bad wolf in the brick house. The pig survived. The wolf didn't. The church will survive that which destroys from within. The church will survive. That which destroys from within will not. The church cannot be hurt from the outside. just as the wolf could not get into the brick house on his own. It can only be hurt from within. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you thinks that he is wise in this age, he must become foolish, so that he may become wise. In other words, the smartest person in the world's wisdom, when they become a Christian, needs to become childlike again, so that they can grow in the faith. Just as a child progresses from being that irrational toddler, that poop player on the floor, to being an adolescent, to being a teenager, to being an adult. Hopefully, they outgrow those things and they become mature. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness before God. For it is written, "He is the one who catches the wise in their craftiness." And again, "The Lord knows the reasoning of the wise, that they are useless. So let no one boast in men, for all belongs to you, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas, or the world or life or death, or things present or things to come. All things belong to you, and you belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God." Paul here is repeating a theme from previous chapters, that God's wisdom is greater than the wisdom of the world. We believe that God created all things, so therefore, we should believe in what God teaches through His Word. Does this mean we're supposed to be ignorant of things such as math, science, and philosophy? Absolutely not. But we need to temper these things with faith. When the world tells us that we're stupid to believe in the things that we do, we know better. And we don't even need to defend ourselves against that kind of talk, because it's not going to change one person's mind. Don't engage them. Disregard them. Instead, do what you've been taught to do. Do God's work, helping and sharing. Something I've also said before, and it bears repeating in this context. God does not need defending. There are so many out there who are defending God against secular teaching in school or government or whatever else, when the truth is, God does not need defending. The church is not going to be hurt from the outside. If these same people would spend their energy doing the gospel of sharing and helping, which is what we're taught to do, instead of engaging people whose minds aren't going to be changed anyway, maybe we really could change the world. Maybe if Christians actually grew up and stopped acting like babies, the world would look at us with respect instead of as the children that we seem to be. Paul said we must become foolish so we can become wise. Why is it so many are stuck at foolish? I'll leave you with this example. The other day, my 3-year-old, Jacinta, wanted to drape her leg over the edge of the booster seat that she sits in our van. And instead of sitting properly with your legs forward so your seatbelt can go over and, you know, protect you from a wreck, she wanted to sit sideways, kind of straddling it. And I told her that she was being bad and that not sitting correctly was being bad. Well, in her toddler mind, she thought I meant that her pants were bad and that it wasn't sitting incorrectly. She said, "No, Daddy, these are good. I like these pants. They're not bad." You see, she was fighting against something that wasn't even real. She had a misperception. I was saying, "What you're doing is unsafe. It's being bad because you're not paying attention." And she thought I was attacking her pants. She didn't even understand. You know, she also protests when other kids do things that we won't let her do. Well, I tell her, those kids don't live in my house, and you do. You know, as Christians in the world, we need to be careful about what defending God is. It could be that what we're protesting isn't even real either. People protest because somebody isn't following who we're following. That's childish. People protest because somebody doesn't do things the way we do them. That's childish. People protest because somebody else, somebody who doesn't live in God's house, who doesn't have Jesus in their lives, isn't following the rules that we do. That's childish. God wants us to deal with his followers and the world as adults. Why instead do we act like children?